Iva, just as Balakaha, a child. Translation. Having said this, Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. Purport. It is confirmed in the Harivamsa that Sri Krishna picked up Govardhan Mountain with his left hand. Sadrita Sangato Megair Giri Savyena Panina. With his left hand, he picked up that mountain which was touching the clouds. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Lord Krishna was preparing to lift Govardhan Hill, a partial expansion of his Yogamaya potency named Samariki temporarily removed all the rain from the sky so that as he ran very swiftly from the porch of his house to the mountain, neither his turban nor other garments became wet. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Namo Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pastatya Deshatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It's an honor to speak on this very special verse, which we could say is the peak of this chapter, entitled Lord Krishna Lifts Govardhan Hill. It's quite a responsibility also. We can certainly find many things to say about this wonderful verse. Krishna is absolute, meaning that his names and his activities are non-different from him. And because he's unlimited, unlimited marvels can be extracted from one single verse describing the pastimes of Krishna. But there are three main points that I'd like to discuss today, which were apparent to me. The first one is the inconceivable mighty potency of the Lord, which is revealed here. Second is that Krishna always protects his devotees. And finally, because it was mentioned at the Radhastami morning lecture, some of the hidden secrets of things like Radharani's role in the lifting of Govardhan Hill, I felt I had a responsibility to research a little bit about these deeper philosophical aspects of this particular verse. And also I wanted to try to understand how is it that we actually have faith in such amazing stories. So as we know, this whole story of the lifting of Govardhan Hill began with the theme of demigod worship. Lord Indra became very proud of his position as King of Heaven, and he forgot the meaning of this position, which is to be a subordinate servant of Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:22, Krishna says, Sataya sradaya yuktas tasya radhanam ihate labhate cha tatakaman mayeva vihitan hitan. Endowed with such a faith, one endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone, Krishna says. So Indra, having forgotten this, sends the devastating rains out of anger against Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan because they've stopped worshiping him. And in the most recent verses, Krishna is contemplating how he is going to counteract this disturbance and this foolishness caused by Indra and bring relief to the residents of Vrindavan, but also bring relief to Indra, because Krishna doesn't want to just smash Indra. He wants to fix this problem of pride that he has. And teach him how to act properly in his position as Indra. Because otherwise Indra himself will suffer from the misapplication of his powers on punishing these great devotees of Krishna. And there's this very common analogy that Srila Prabhupada gives, that by watering the root of the tree, all the branches are satisfied. So all these demigods like Lord Indra have managerial responsibilities that were given to them by Krishna, but ultimately Krishna is the source of everything. So if we worship Krishna directly, that's just as good as owing our debt to the demigods. But Lord Indra forgets this. So like the most amazing of artists and the greatest artist, Krishna effortlessly lifts Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand. Here Krishna is clearly exhibiting that he is God. It's like he's passing us a note under the door saying, hey, this isn't difficult for me. As a matter of fact, Sukadeva Goswami in the verse emphasizes Lord Krishna, who is Lord Vishnu himself. So this reminds us of Lord Vishnu's position. What is a mountain for Lord Vishnu? It's absolutely nothing. In his Vishnu form, Krishna floats unlimited amounts of planets in space, in one single universe, and there's millions of such universes, which to Krishna all seem like mustard seeds. So Krishna is exhibiting one of his opulences here. How do we know that Krishna is God? Well, to be God, you have to be able to display the six opulences of God, namely, to be all-beautiful, all-knowing, most famous, possess all wealth, and at the same time be most renounced, and to be all-powerful. And this makes Krishna all-attractive. What is the Sanskrit word for all-attractive? Krishna. If you're ever confronted by someone who tells you, well, you Hare Krishnas, you're worshiping a false god, you can ask him, well, do you believe that God is all-beautiful, all-knowing, all-famous? Is he the richest? Is he most renounced and the almighty? And most likely they'll say yes. So you can say, well, doesn't this make him all-attractive? And they'll say yes. So you can say, well, so you're also worshiping Krishna, because Krishna means the all-attractive. So Krishna is exhibiting this opulence of being all-powerful by lifting Govardhan Hill. And who can do this but God? In the Olympic Games, we see there are some of the challenges are weightlifting. And the weightlifters who compete from all countries, you know, they're totally buff. They've been working out for years. And when they get under these weights that weigh, you know, several hundreds of pounds, it's a huge, huge struggle for them to, you know, they got to have techniques to position themselves properly. And then in a particular motion, they're able to lift the weight. And as they're doing this, their faces are completely contorted to the point that they don't look like themselves. And then finally, when they hold the weight on top of their heads for maybe a few seconds, then they immediately have to drop it. But Krishna, as it says here, he lifts this mountain just like a child plucks a mushroom from the ground, totally effortlessly. He still has his beautiful, all-attractive smile. And he holds it with the weakest finger from his weaker arm. Right? There's this expression, this is left hand's play for me, meaning that I can do this no problem with my weaker hand. So Krishna is doing this, and he holds it for 7 days and seven nights. So in this way, we can see very easily that Krishna is differentiated from common people. My younger sister-in-law, Madhavi, who lives in India, you know how in family circles we usually have these classic stories that we like to tell. So my wife always tells me this story, how when her sister Madhavi was 6 years old in India, somehow she got into this philosophical conversation with an Indian gentleman who was of the common thinking that ultimately we are all God, or we all become God. And Madhavi told him, well, if your God lift this house, Because that's what Krishna did. So simply, you know. And the man was stunned. He had nothing to say to that, and he walked away. Little six-year-old. So our tendency is to want to be God. We want to have these six opulences of God. We want to be the center of our own Rasa Leela. And this is natural. This is why we're here in the first place, in this material world. But ultimately, we should realize that our endeavors to enjoy like God cannot bring us eternal happiness. And this should bring us to ask some of the fundamental questions about life. What's this world all about? If I'm not finding happiness, why am I here? Where do I come from, etc.? And eventually, this is meant to launch us on the spiritual path. The material world is created in this way, in a way where, yes, it is here for our enjoyment when we want to enjoy separately from Krishna, but Krishna very strategically makes it in such a way that ultimately we have to come to this conclusion that there's something better out there. So if we want to do these things like enjoying such as Krishna, first we have to lift Govardhan Hill, and that we cannot do. So we must recognize our position as conditioned souls. When we touch something, for example, if you leave your car sitting in a parking lot for two weeks, it'll become dusty. Similarly, when we touch something that's dirty, we become dirty ourselves. But the sun, for example, when the sun touches something, it becomes purified. And the sun is just a minuscule manifestation of Krishna's potency. So Krishna is completely transcendental. And when we speak about his Rasa Leela, it's to be understood that his relationship with the gopis and Radharani have nothing to do with our conception of men and women relationships in the material world. But to understand this, we have to read and hear about Krishna, learn to love him. This is why we speak Srimad Bhagavatam every morning in our temples. My dear God brother, Ramchandra Prabhu from Atlanta, often says, one class a day keeps Maya away. So through this process, we can develop the understanding and become purified. So the second point I wanted to make is, Kunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranasyati. Bhagavad Gita 9:31. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Krishna always protects his devotees. Actually, Krishna exhibited this pastime to install faith in all of us for all time that he always protects his devotees. This is the important message that is to be found in this verse. And people who have less faith in God, they make all sorts of arrangements, be they small or large, to protect themselves and protect their loved ones. For example, there's this frenzy, especially in America, for owning guns. Or we have so many security devices. When we moved into the house where we live now, I was not used to all the security measures that had been put in place by the previous owner. You know, there's an elaborate alarm system, and beware of dog sign, and right next to the beware of dog sign, there's a sign saying this house is protected by this security company, and he had planted all kinds of trees and bushes to protect his privacy. So many things are being done for our protection. Our political system is in place for our protection. Scientific study is for the same reason. Also, you know, when there's a hurricane coming, you know you got to watch the Weather Channel, Hurricane Watch, and be aware of what is the proper evacuation route that you'll have to use, or board your windows, or this is the storm shelter you have to go to. There's actually a TV show that I saw a few times called Doomsday Preppers. This is about so many people who in so many ways prepare for the end of the world. And recently with the end of the Mayan calendar that was announced, these underground end of the world shelters who were being made already, the sales spiked from, depending on the study, 500 to 1,000%, and they cost up to $150,000. And these shelters are, you know, very luxurious, like these luxury RVs. They got a nice big flat screen TV and you know, comfortable couches, and you know, the kids love them. It's like this underground fort, and usually you can have enough supplies to survive for about a year. And the different reasons why people would get this, I studied this a little bit before this class. There's the Mayan calendar, there's nuclear warfare, biological disasters, solar flares, pole shifts, asteroids that might hit the Earth, tsunamis, supervolcanoes, economic collapses, anarchy, terrorism, electromagnetic pulses. These are some of the reasons why people prepare themselves in such a way. Colombians? I didn't say that. But there are so many examples of how we're actually totally powerless against material nature. You know, we have the flooding of New Orleans, the tsunamis in Asia, the volcanoes in California, you know, droughts, floods, forest fires. Material nature is so powerful that really there's nothing we can do. And ultimately, time, kala, is going to take everything away. But as long as we resist the powerful river of this material existence, we will be defeated. And the more we increase our material attachments, the more we worry, the more we suffer, and the more we want, and the more we have, the more problems that we get. In these documentaries, there's often this common question that's talked about. Who's crazy? Am I crazy for getting the shelter, or are you crazy for not getting it? But actually, this question is not properly based, because it's based on our material desires. It's based on the temporality of our material bodies and of material life. So unless we understand our constitutional position as eternal souls, and we look into that particular interest, our long-term interest as eternal souls, then our desires for protection will ultimately always be defeated. You can be the healthiest, most fit person, like Bruce Lee, or the most protected person, like, say, the President of the United States with agents and bodyguards. Still, you can die at any moment. These Samvartaka clouds, they're not ordinary clouds. The clouds that Indra sent to Vrindavan out of anger, they're reserved for the devastation at the end of the day of Brahma. And they can destroy the entire creation. When these clouds are unleashed, within minutes, the oceans of the earth merge and cover the entire planet. And in this way, the causal ocean takes over everything. This is the annihilation that happens, that they think they're going to protect themselves with these underground shelters. But actually, yes, we should have some minimal amount of self-preservation. You know, we should have a proper way of supporting our families. And as we see, a lot of devotees here in Alachua, including myself, are very much into being self-sufficient. Having a house with, you know, say a wood burner or a manual hand pump for the water, some land to grow vegetables, or, you know, just living in a community of trusted people where if some crisis were to happen, you can be somewhat self-sufficient. This is important. But it's to the degree that we take shelter of Krishna that we'll find ultimate protection. Krishna says, Daivi hiesha gunamai, mama maya duratyaya, mame vaye papadyante, mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So that's the proper understanding, that ultimately Krishna is our only real shelter. And there's so many examples of how Krishna does protect those who are surrendered to him. Not only in our scriptures, like this story of the lifting of Govardhan Hill, but we see beautiful examples of some of our very elevated devotees within ISKCON. For example, Yamuna Prabhu. Some of you may have heard the story that when she was in Vrindavan in the early days, she was taking bath in one of the rivers, maybe one of the holy rivers, I forget. But right as she was doing this, she saw a group of dacoits or gangsters that were approaching her. And she knew that, you know, this was a very bad situation and that, you know, there was not much she could do in her situation. So she prayed to Krishna. And right at that moment, a fog took over the entire area to the point where you barely could see, and she was able to run away. Similarly, you know, we know stories of Mother Malati and, you know, Shyamsundar Prabhu in the early days. They were in London, I believe, and they were practically, I mean, they were homeless. They were living out of cardboard boxes, and they're, you know, out of their pure devotion for Prabhupada, they're trying to start a temple. And one day they're walking down the street and cash is just flying down the road. And they were able to cover their first month's rent or something like that, you know, for their first temple. So, you know, the more we are sincere and the more we are fully devoted to Krishna, you know, I think it's Bhakti Tirtha Swami that said, unless we're experiencing miracles every day, we're not really fully committing to Krishna. So if you remain under that protection of Krishna, then nobody and nothing can do you any harm. Raike Krishna Mareke. If Krishna protects you, nobody can kill you. But if Krishna wants to kill you, then nobody can give you protection. Mare Krishna Rakeke. And that we have an example with the story of Hiranyakashipu, who wanted to be invincible and prayed to Lord Brahma to be neither killed by any man or beast, by any weapon, neither during the day or at night, neither on earth or in the air. And of course Krishna, he wanted to kill him, this great demon, so nothing can defeat him. And while still respecting Lord Brahma's boons to Hiranyakashipu, Krishna appeared as Lord Nrsingadeva, as half man, half lion, neither man or beast. And he killed him with his nails, without any weapons, on his lap, so he was neither on the ground or in the sky. It was right at dusk, so it was neither during the day nor at night, and it was right at the entranceway of the palace, neither inside or out. So Krishna is showing here, do not be afraid of any condition of life. If I'm on your side, nothing can defeat you. Krishna is the all-powerful. And as it's explained in this purport, even these devastating rains, as Krishna swiftly ran from the porch of his house to the Govardhan Mountain, he didn't even get wet. Nothing could affect him. You know, he had to be beautiful with his turban and his jewels nice and dry for the devotees who were about to take darshan of him. It's also explained that all the wild animals, while these, you know, terrible thunder and rain is happening on Govardhan Hill, actually the thunder is said to have felt like, you know, flowers just falling on the hill, on the body of Govardhan. And the animals were peacefully grazing on the top of Mount Govardhan while these devastating rains were happening. So why is this? Because just the tip of Krishna's left pinky was touching Govardhan and gave ultimate protection to these animals and to Govardhan Hill. Another thing we can learn from this pastime is that the residents of Vrindavan very naturally took to Krishna's shelter. When the rains began to fall, they immediately went to Krishna. We have the verse, Sarva Dharmam Parichaya Mamikam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Padebhyo Moksha Ishyami Masucha. Krishna says, just surrender unto me and nothing can harm you, do not fear. So the lifting of Govardhan Hill is Krishna's personal demonstration of this verse. In the Bhagavad Gita, he promises that he will protect his devotees, and here we can see that he is directly actually doing it. Krishna is Girivaradhari. Giri means mountain, Dhari means the holder of, and Vara means the best of. Another name is Giridhari, the holder of the mountain, but in this name Girivaradhari, we can see that the mountain is our shelter. Dhari, the holder, this is Krishna, and he gives the best of protection, Vara. So Girivaradhari means Krishna is our best shelter. And to the degree we take shelter of Krishna, the more he will give us shelter. Can anybody think of the verse? Yeya tamam prapajante tamstajeva paham yaham mama vartmanu vartante manusya parta sarvasa. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. So this is Krishna's supreme reciprocation. And practically, what does it mean to take shelter of Krishna? Well, it's to apply the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, through which we can develop our Krishna consciousness, our consciousness of always surrendering to him. And taking shelter of him often means to be faced with the most difficult circumstances and responding to these in the right way. Arjuna had to fight the most terrible of competitions, fighting soldiers like Bhima and Karna, some of them being his own family and his teachers, his friends. So for Krishna, we should be warriors willing to fight our own internal demons and also to exercise our duties, our responsibilities with great integrity and great honor as a service for Krishna. Hari means one who takes away. This is another name of Krishna. And a lot of people are afraid of worshipping Hari because they know that everything will be taken away. There's this verse or this story in our scriptures that say, be very careful, because if you go to the banks of the river Jamuna and see this beautiful little blue boy playing his flute, everything will be taken away from you. Hari means thief. But Krishna actually takes away our material desires to bring us ultimate auspiciousness. And when these rains came down on Vrindavan, they lost everything. They lost their homes, they lost their shelters, they didn't have, you know, their food, their society anymore, their crops. But when they were under the hill of Govardhan, they found full satisfaction in their uninterrupted meditation on Krishna for 7 days and felt totally complete. So we should learn from the histories of Krishna's pastimes that this process by which we become purified is about losing our desires for our material attachments. And we should never underestimate that the events we are faced with in our life are always, my father likes to say this, you know, the essence of Bhagavad Gita is that the story is always a lot deeper than it seems. And by surrendering to Krishna, we're capable of a lot more than we know. So, as I mentioned earlier, I'll try now to offer some insight into some of the deeper philosophical aspects of the lifting of Govardhan Hill. I don't usually venture myself into these kind of studies, but I felt like I had a responsibility to do so because this nice devotee at Radhastami had mentioned that actually, you know, the hidden secret of Krishna's left pinky is that Radharani is lifting Govardhan Hill. And I'm like, oh gosh, how am I going to get into this kind of discussion? But by the grace of Pran Govinda Prabhu, I got some help. And he actually shared some nice things, which I wanted to share also. The first one is that in the Hari Vamsa, Vyasadeva explains that Krishna, in order to lift Govardhan Hill, he had to first use two hands, right? And this makes sense if you have a large, heavy object that's flat on the ground. You would most likely lift it with two hands first and then position yourself underneath it in such a way that you could hold it then with one hand. In the Vaishnava Tosani, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that if you go to the north side of Manasaganga, still to this day, you will find that there is a large gap on that particular side of Govardhan Hill. And this is where Krishna put his hands in order to lift Govardhan Hill. You know, you would first lift it on one side, and so that would have crumbled a lot of the dirt. So this is actually a place of pilgrimage that you can visit on the north side of Manasaganga. Jiva Goswami also explains that when Krishna positioned himself under Govardhan, there was this beautiful large rock from the top of the hill that got shooken off and fell down to the ground. And this Krishna used as a platform to stand on, because since he was only 7 years old at the time, he was still a short little boy. And there wouldn't have been enough room for all the residents of Vrindavan to fit if he was just standing on the ground and holding it. So he stood on this platform, and this gave plenty of room for the taller Vrajabhasis to stand under Govardhan. And this rock is explained to be Lord Balaram's expansion. And he made it very comfortable standing place for Krishna. It's explained also that as the Supreme Lord, Krishna doesn't have anything to do. Because if you have everything, you don't need to do anything. His only activity as his original self, Krishna, is to enjoy, usually his relationships with his devotees. Prabhupada often quotes the words, Natasya Karanam, which means that Krishna never works. So if he never works, how is he lifting Govardhan Hill? Well, this is part of the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy, that Krishna is one and different. And actually, all these activities that he performs, like lifting Govardhan Hill, is performed by his expansions, or his separated energy. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 4th chapter of Adi Lila, it's explained that the Lila Shakti of Krishna is none other than the daughter of Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani. The name Radha is derived from the word Aradhana, which means worship. So Radharani's only purpose, her sole reason for being, is to worship Krishna. And it's understood in this way that she is actually doing the lifting. It's the potency of Radharani. She actually has many different shaktis or potencies, but there are three main shaktis of Radharani who are derived from this Satchit Ananda quality of the Lord, eternal knowledge and blissful. From Sat, eternal, comes the Sandini potency of Radharani. This is the ever-expanding potency of the Lord. For example, when he displays his universal form, which is unlimited and ever expanding, that's one of the potencies of Radharani, as Sandini Shakti. Then coming from Chit, knowledge, is the Samvit Shakti. Material knowledge develops ultimately to knowledge about Brahman, spiritual knowledge, and this knowledge is meant to ultimately become feelings and relationships with Krishna. And that's the Samvit Shakti of Radharani. And finally, Ananda, blissful, this is the Ladini Shakti potency, also personified as Radharani, this pleasure potency. Material sense pleasure, when it becomes spiritualized in its pure form, it's called Brahma Bhuta, and this is nourishment in seva, which ultimately gives full fulfillment and happiness. So I hope that made sense. And it's a little elevated, hard for me to come up with these things, but ultimately these pastimes, though they make nice children's books, they are actually meant for the Paramahamsas. This is the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and as we know, it should only be approached after having completely studied the first part of Srimad Bhagavatam, having developed a solid philosophical and devotional foundation. Until then, it can be very difficult to understand the depths of pastimes like the lifting of Govardhan Hill. And it can be even be difficult to accept them as truth. A good friend of mine, who's been a devotee for a few years, still to this day, he just cannot wrap his head around the idea of Krishna's relationship with the gopis. And I don't blame him. It's very difficult to understand such things. So we have to be sensitive to the fact that newcomers and sometimes even devotees, including myself, are unable to fully embrace pastimes that depict such unbelievable and sometimes things that seem immoral in Krishna's pastimes. And, you know, we rather stick to some more basic philosophy. And this, I find, usually happens when there's a lack of association. I know for myself, before we moved to Alachua and we were finally in a devotional community again, I was so affected by the, you know, the workplace and the material environment that we lived in, that whenever I would come to the temple and I'd be dancing and chanting in the kirtan, I had this thought in the back of my head. Well, here I am, I'm jumping up and down like those Hare Krishnas. You know? Even though I'm born in, you know, in the movement, went to Gurukul, when you associate so much with the material world, you know, you can't help but develop that perspective of life, and you develop that kind of emotion towards you know, the practice of Krishna consciousness and some of Krishna's pastimes. People on the outside, you know, they think we're pretty wacky, just dancing around bushes and worshipping mountains. They might respect that there's a cultural, you know, aspect to it, but other than that, it's total craziness. So, as long as As we develop appreciation for Krishna's pastimes, we should also develop appreciation for the mission of Srila Prabhupada's movements, which is to be able to present all these pastimes and this philosophy properly. And that just means caring enough about people to take the time to present it in such a way that it's understandable for them and not intimidating, and ultimately bring them, you know, guide them in such a way that they will be comfortable enough to ask the proper questions. When something is outside of the realm of people's perception and experience, they tend to be very afraid of it. And because this means that the rational way of thinking that they've built their life on is taken away from them. And they are very attached to this. If you take that away, ultimately it causes this sort of, you know, they lose whatever grasp they have on their own mortality, and whatever defense mechanism they have. But yet, there is no rational way to explain Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill. And there is something to be said about the fact that we cannot truly understand Krishna unless we accept the inconceivable aspect of his pastimes. And the more we read, the more we chant, the more we associate with devotees, the more we can develop this understanding. Srila Prabhupada says that as we practice Krishna consciousness, eat prasadam, all these things, Krishna gives us the finer brain tissues by which we can understand all these wonderful activities. So this wonderful pastime of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill is worshipped every year at Govardhan Puja, such a special pastime. Govardhan Puja will be coming up soon. And Krishna is also worshipped in his form as lifting Govardhan Hill, Srinachi. We often see this deity of Krishna with his left hand raised up. That's also worshipped in temples. And hopefully this verse will inspire us to always seek and take shelter of Krishna in his beautiful form as Giri Varadhari and also as Giri Rani. Vivo. If there's any questions or comments, corrections, yes, Prabhu.
The fourth sentence, Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, seems to have a subordinate connotation there. Before you answer that, I want to make a quick comment about the lifting of the veil. I mean, it's a spiritual thing. Krishna could have just desired, and that hill would have lifted. He could just have up, you know, or he could have just stopped the cloud without even this that, you know, so many things. But of course, I mean, we're trying to, you know, to understand the whole perspective of him lifting, you know, going under the hill and lifting with a tiny finger. And so, you see, he could just say, go, and the hill would just move above everything, you know. Yeah, but coming back to the question of, you know, Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, it seems to have like a subordinate connotation.
Just the way it's grammatically presented.
Yeah. So if somebody were to ask you that, how would you?
Right, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Who is speaking here? Sukadev Goswami is speaking. The best thing that I can say is that a lot of times, you know, every demigod has a particular relationship with Krishna. Maybe he's saying this in relationship with Indra, who perhaps is, you know, recognizes God more in his Vishnu form, just like Lord Brahma, you know, with the pastime of when he's bewildered by the coward boys being that he had stolen. The demigods usually will have a relationship with Krishna as the creator, as Lord Vishnu, and that's who they relate with as being God, because it's very visible and it's very obvious that he is God as Lord Vishnu, where everything emanates from him. They know that's where they came from directly. But as Krishna, it's a lot more difficult to recognize the Supreme God. And that's what happens here with Lord Indra, you know, who's covered by his pride. He doesn't recognize that Krishna is God, and, you know, he has all this anger towards him. So, you know, maybe it's just presented in this way. Krishna, who is Lord Vishnu himself, just to remind us that, you know, this little Krishna who seems so insignificant at times is, you know, how would you answer your own question?
yeah, because like you said, they know the supremacy of Vishnu,
right.
See, and so, by saying that, really, they're saying that he's just not an ordinary little being.
Right.
He is, you know, but of course, we know he's even the source of Vishnu, you know, but that's more technical stuff. Really.
Yeah.
But of course, the idea is to give him the supremacy. He's just not a little kid.
Right.
He is the supreme.
And if you, you know, if you think about it, it does make sense that Krishna would be the original form of God, where he doesn't have to do anything but enjoy. It would make sense that that would be the primary position that God would want to take, and all these other responsibilities he would do in his separated forms. Yes, Prabhu?
Thank you, what a wonderful class, Prabhu. Actually, I was just reading a quote from Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj that says, "Do you think you're a devotee of Krishna, Baba? You're not a devotee of Krishna until you become a devotee of your guru." So my realization is like, you know, maybe you can tell your friend this, you know, sometimes with our diminutive mind, we try to understand Krishna Lila without even understanding Prabhupada.
Yeah.
You know, because if you have faith in Prabhupada, and Prabhupada says, "I see Narada Muni," you know, then do you believe that Srila Prabhupada saw Narada Muni or not? Mm-hmm. Because nobody saw him, only he saw him. So in order for us to be able to understand Krishna, first we have to understand Srila Prabhupada. What to speak of our own guru. So, you know, many times, and I've seen, because I've been around, you know, fortunately, but Krishna conscious in around devotees, you know, trying to become Krishna consciousness since I was a kid. And I seen that in the old days when Srila Prabhupada was still in the planet, this Radha Krishna topic was very, very elevated.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now Radha Krishna is like, you know,
right,
like dancing boy and girl and this and that, but so it has become like too popular and too thin like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why Srila Prabhupada says very carefully about many things like that. So I think that in order for us, and I was also telling Carlos, my friend, he's coming to Krishna consciousness for a month. I was telling him, just become a lover of Prabhupada. Read Prabhupada Lilamrita. Listen to his classes. Read his books. In that way, he's going to be able to understand a little bit about Krishna. Because otherwise, you know, if he tried to understand Krishna now without understanding the beginning of how Prabhupada came, why, how, did and that, then it becomes like sentimental. And then one day, then the mind for faulting, and then all of a sudden, boom, we're out, and we're trying to look for somebody else other than Prabhupada to explain Krishna to us. Which Prabhupada say already, everything is in my books. So, you know, maybe if your friend is 2 years in Krishna consciousness, that's what I want, you know. I'm moving to Alachua in November. I want to make a Prabhupada night in my house every night where we can understand and read about Prabhupada. Bahari Prabhu came one time to our home. You know, I couldn't make it steady that program. But when he spoke in our home about Prabhupada, it was like Hare Krishna. All the doubts of your mind goes away just by listening to Prabhupada's miracles.
Yeah.
So I just think that, you know, instead of trying to understand about God having girlfriends, you know, we have to see God as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu giving the holy name. All this Radha Krishna, la la la. I mean, very nice, Hari Bol, Radha Krishna, they're here. But we're Bhaktas of Gauranga. We're supposed to understand Radha Krishna when we understand Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we only understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to see that Prabhupada's service and his rasa and his mood of preaching in this world. So that's just my realization.
Yes, thank you so much. So true. And this, a lot of people don't understand why we put so much emphasis on the guru in our tradition. You know, George Harrison, I think my father told me that when he, I don't know if it was in the studio or something, but he was, you know, with George Harrison one day, and he asked him, "How's your Krishna consciousness doing?" And George Harrison answered very honestly and, you know, with humility, that I'm still having a hard time with this idea of the guru. So people actually have a hard time understanding, you know, why the cyclic succession and all these things, but you've explained it so nicely that it's true, these Radha Krishna, it's so elevated, and you know, we need this present person that we can relate with, read about, speak with, and who can give us Krishna. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, looks like we're out of time. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.